College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We're live at Media Row in New Orleans. You got me, Kevin Hagelin. You got Corey Majors, the famous Mike Bassick, the more famouser Alec Medford. Gentlemen, even though some of us are apart, we miss you, Alec. Welcome to the program.
Man, it's wonderful to be here. Oh, was that Alec's turn to talk? Did I just step on?
You can talk.
Alec, would you like to say something?
No, that's just nice. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate that. Mike, it's good to see you this morning. I hope you're full of energy and ready to rock today, baby.
I am. I spent some time with Kavanaugh, and we were talking about our best moments on the fan. And I'd just like to do this for all the Tolos that have been around for a while. If you still have Jeff Kavanaugh's phone number, can you please text him that you're thinking of him? Because he hasn't maybe heard from you guys in a while when I paid him $40 to give his phone number out on the air.
That's it?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it either. I'm like, yeah, here's two $20 bills. You're screwed. And so I would just like for everybody to maybe just send Kavanaugh a quick message and tell him you're thinking about him.
I'm thinking of you today.
Okay. So you're texting him right now?
I figure why not.
Yeah, why not?
Mike told me too.
He has his number.
Yeah. That I do too.
Yeah, yes. I was listening the day that he paid him. So I was like, hey, finally got Jeff's number. So
that's the way you got Jeff Stemmer, not via, hey, I know you, and we work together.
Hey, you work together. I might need your number at some point to communicate.
Instead, no, I was listening to your radio bit, and now I have your phone number.
Yeah,
okay.
Man.
Okay, I like it. Now, we have a lot of guests today, so we're going to try to just work in some of our normal segments with these guests, or maybe, you know, maybe a guest or two drops off along the way. We'll see how it goes.
That has happened before.
Yes.
We've been like, chaos, let's go. Three guests, same place, let's go.
Yes, so we can absolutely make that happen. And, Alec, I'm going to leave it up to you. Give me a Mavericks or a Stars cut, and let's start this thing off.
Kyrie drives against Reggie Jackson. Max Christie, good-looking three, rattles in. And Max has his first basket with the Mavericks.
All right, so I don't think I'm frozen, Mike. Okay. Am I frozen in your screen?
Hey, YouTube, is Kevin frozen
no,
on the screen?
No, Mike, are you
I'm moving?
I think Mike's on the Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah, I have to do
yeah,
this
Yeah, I am,
thing.
Too. I haven't gotten my dongle yet. Do we need to explain that? Do people really care, or do we just go into Mavs and Stars?
Yeah, keep rocking on.
Okay.
Keep going. Hundreds of people watched, I bet.
Mavs.
You okay?
Mavericks and Stars.
Kessel Edwards or whatever.
Kessler. Played. It's. What do you think his first name is?
Who cares?
Joel Embiid was so excited to beat the Mavericks. He was like, I'll play a basketball game
yeah.
tonight.
I guess. I don't I have. Everything you tell me is going to be news to me.
So you're not even aware?
I knew they lost.
He's hurt, Kevin.
I have no clue of a box score. I have no clue of anything. I took the NBA app off of my phone, and I am not doing this anymore.
Okay. This is like finding out that your wife has been cheating on you for decades, all right?
And then, I was about to say this is exciting news, but that wouldn't be exciting news.
Yeah,
I was going to be like, this is exciting news. Whatever you tell me in this Maverick game is going to be news to me besides they lost. I don't know if they lost by 3. I don't know if they lost by 43.
Yeah.
Lost by 2.
They lost by 2?
Yeah. She's been cheating on you for a decade, and now she's saying, and you have to watch their whole life, all right? You got to watch their whole life play out, Kevin. With her and her new husband in the house that you bought, with your truck, with your kids.
Uh-huh.
That's what it feels like.
Does it?
I don't know, man. I've never been. That's never happened
to me. Are you also boycotting the Mavs then?
No, I'm not going to do that. I mean, I'm dedicated to the laundry. I always have been. But it hurts. I understand. I empathize and sympathize with what Mike's going through right now. He wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah, the great thing is, from, I don't know, 18 years ago, you can go get out those Doug Christie jerseys that you didn't sell and now go, hey, look, we got another Christie.
I never had one.
But this Christie's going to be better, right? He looked pretty good in his first game.
Tell me about it. Okay. I'm excited to hear.
He was hitting three-pointers.
Okay, how many?
4 for 4.
4 for 4?
Yeah, that was impressive.
Luka's never gone 4 for 4.
He had 9 rebounds, dude.
Luka's never had...
Well, he's definitely had more than 9 rebounds.
Okay.
Many, many
times. 9 rebounds, yep. And at least 12 points.
He was I believe he had 16 points. He looked pretty solid on defense until, of course, the last couple of possessions where Joel Embiid got a dunk and a layup in the last two possessions. Well,
Anthony
not the
Davis
last,
couldn't stop him?
He didn't play in that
what?
Game.
What?
Joel Embiid, not the last two possessions, but their last two baskets were a dunk and a layup by Embiid, who I believe had a triple-double to give them the lead, and the Mavericks lose by 2 points.
He
what are you going to do?
Max Christie was kind of like Luka at the free throw line, 1 for 2. But you know, if him and Kyrie would have hit their free throws, this game would have been tied at the end. Kyrie was 10 for 11 from the free throw line, and he needed to be perfect so they could be tied.
I'm just doing math in my head, Corey. He made 4 three-pointers for 12 points. He made a free throw for 13. How did he get to 16?
He was 5 for 8 for field goals.
Was he at 16 points?
15.
Okay.
15.
Yeah, there we go. It's like, how did he get an extra point on a two-pointer?
Okay, that's a fair question. So, 15 points. All right, Mike, I'm going to take a chance here.
Yeah. I have no clue what the Stars did. They played the Ducks.
Okay, did you watch the Stars?
No.
Oh, man.
Okay.
I was keeping up with the Stars last night on the phone.
I don't think you understand how exciting this is sitting in this chair. I just found out what happened in the Mavs game. You're like my television right now, and I have no clue if the Stars won or not.
Okay.
He's like a Tolo. He's like me whenever that
this is exciting. Whatever you say is going to be like breaking news.
Okay.
That's cool. That's a good vibe, man.
I guess for the Stars then.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they lost 2-1. John Gibson was really on his game. I know on social media some folks were complaining about the officiating. I, however, think the Stars have themselves to blame for looking maybe a little lackluster last night against a team that's not particularly good. They have been good at home lately, but I believe this broke the Stars' 5-game winning streak.
You win some, you lose some.
That is true, Mike. You do win some and you do lose some. Are you more surprised,
okay,
having just learned all of this information, by the Stars' close loss or the Mavericks' close loss?
I guess I'll say Stars because they're good at their sport.
I'm going to say Mavs because they shouldn't have been able to be that close. I don't feel like they I guess they did play better team defense. They held the team under 130, so that was nice.
Oh, sweet. What was the final score?
118-116.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to say this: the Mavericks, because it was like they shouldn't have been. That's a brand new team put together. Almost the entire lineup all together. And you didn't even have PJ last night.
Did the Caleb Martin dude play?
I don't think so.
He did.
Oh, he did?
Because remember he was...
It's not official yet or something?
He was still a game-time decision because he hasn't played in 3.5 weeks-ish.
I think the good thing is we're getting all the injuries out from our new players early.
They might both be back for the Celtics game, and if not then, for the Rockets game. Does it help you at all if I told you that Max Christie really likes golf? You like golf?
I do, yeah. Can't wait to play some.
With Max Christie. What if you got a chance
to play
with him?
I mean, I'm like his dad.
Yeah.
Would that do you think like you could bond with him on the golf course and that might bring you back into the fold?
Yeah, I'll be like, you know my buddy, I would be like, and then they say I don't know him. I'm like, well, he was part of y'all's agency. He's like, yeah, I only know these few guys. But yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
It doesn't mean I'm gonna watch them play basketball. I'll say I wish you the best.
All right. Let me try a different tactic. Not out on the Mavs. Didn't watch the Stars last night.
Yeah.
Is there something you did watch or engage with that you would rather discuss?
No, I won't say rather because every college basketball team has 15 new players a year.
That
Texas Tech beat Baylor.
Hey.
That's what was on my television.
Okay. Any breakdown of that game you want to share with us?
There's a dude for Tech hitting a lot of shots. Tech looked good. Never seen him play basketball this year. They had a really small point guard that came off the bench, I think, because I didn't get it from the start. I got back from the party around 9:30.
Okay.
My son went 1 for 1 with a hit by pitch in JV.
Okay.
Yesterday.
Is he going to bounce?
Yeah, he's and then my other son, Cal, played on the other Bishop Lynch JV team. He went, I believe, 0 for 2 with a walk, but hit the ball pretty decent from what mom told me to the second baseman and shortstop. And then he pitched two innings of no runs.
Do you?
That's awesome.
Do you trust your wife's recreations and breakdowns of?
No.
Okay.
But I did get a video sent from my older son, Jake, who videoed Cal's first at bat, and he hit a hard, like, one hopper to the shortstop. Yeah. So I do know that he hit that ball hard. But
I was just curious, because in the past you've described things that Sue has watched, and you're like,
geez. Yeah, I think I remember one time you saying that she told you that he went to two bases. He hit and he went to two bases.
One time he got a hit to the middle fielder.
That's right.
I was like, I have no effing idea what's going on.
Yeah, he's the middle fielder.
Does that mean center field, shortstop,
center?
Okay.
Pitcher. The right fielder, the left fielder, and the middle
fielder. Okay.
I mean,
you know how women are.
Yes, thank you, PJ
Washington.
Really appreciate that.
He's still on the team.
Thank you for still being on the team for now.
Yeah.
Hey.
All right, listen, man.
Do you want him on the team?
No, yes, I do want him on the team. I know. I heard that the trade that y'all were talking about in Cross. I don't want to do that at all.
Yeah, why not? Let's go all 30.
Are you going to listen? Or I know you like unfollow. Do you think you're going to listen or be on the lookout for anything trade related tomorrow?
I don't think so, but there's friends that I have here that know how big of a Mavericks fan I was, and they keep telling me all this information, and I just smile and take it all in. But like,
realistically, you want them to be quiet.
Wouldn't it be weird rooting for the Mavs? We're rooting for our hometown team. You're rooting for Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and Anthony Davis, if that comes about. And Max Christie, and I'm guessing he won't be healthy quickly, but if Derek Lively, so your starting lineup would be four new players and Derek Lively. Off the bench would be Najee Marshall, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caleb Martin.
If it was at the beginning of the season, like let's say just the offseason would have been pandemonium and all this would have happened. That would have been different for
Corey. I have an entire offseason to prepare my mind that this is my team. And like that's what it feels like. It just feels like it's just a bunch of things thrown together whenever I was like, this is the team that I'm going to follow through the season to a championship. And now midway through the season, how many games we got left? 35?
Less than that.
It just feels like it's going to be this hodgepodge that maybe we get lucky, we get into the second round of the playoffs, or even get into the playoffs at some point. I do understand you're trying to make sure you have a healthy team or something like that, but these guys are just different characters. We got to get to know them at some point. We have no other choice right now than just to get to know them or do what Mike does. Just say,
That's what I want to check. Would that have made any difference to you if all of this craziness would have happened in the offseason and you knew going into the season it's going to be Kyrie, AD, Max Christie, et cetera?
I would probably be out because there's a part of me that has always felt like the NBA has been fixed. Through the 2006 finals.
So some pre-existing issues.
Yeah, then trading Luka when they sign a $76 billion TV contract to the Lakers for a 32-year-old and one draft pick.
Yeah.
It feels really fishy that they want to keep that $76 billion because Bally's backed out of everything.
Yeah.
They showed in the United States court, you do not have to pay these contracts as a television company. So that $76 billion, none of it's guaranteed. They're going to be like, we ain't paying it. We don't like your product anymore. I think the NBA sees that their product is slowly going down. And I think, well, what better way to lift it up than to put the international superstar on the most popular team?
And they buzz everything with all these trades from yesterday. Like those were hot discussions yesterday that brought intrigue to the league.
Can I prove any of that? No, and I never will. And just like I can't prove that David Stern hated Mark Cuban and intentionally gave the championship to the Miami Heat, but that's what I believe.
Same.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, we will bring to you former Lions and Steelers quarterback, two-time Super Bowl champion. It is Charlie Batch next right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 Through the Fan. We're live on Radio Row in New Orleans. Thank you very much to Stella Artois for making this happen and being our presenting sponsor. And right now, we bring to you former Lions, former Steelers quarterback, multiple-time Super Bowl winner. It is Charlie Batch. Good morning. morning, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing very well. Now, I feel like you have some unique insight into this, even though you played, obviously not your entire career here, but is poor, sweet Detroit just cursed to walk the earth with no Super Bowl appearances and championships forever?
That is tough. That is, because I really thought this year was going to be
For sure.
And you get to the point last year, you know, obviously you're aggressive, but if you take the points, at least you're playing in the Super Bowl. And then just to get the excitement and have the number one seed, and the way that the energy and the electricity was flowing throughout the city in that playoffs and at the playoff game at Ford Field, it was exciting to watch. And this was the first year in 23 years. And, of course, last year they were on the road. First time in 23 years that Detroit has played 1 week longer than the Steelers. So having the opportunity to go up there and watch them, I'm like, man, this is it. And, of course, they fell short of their goal, but it was tough.
What's the relationship like between the city and the Lions? Obviously, I know you started your career there. It feels like they just so desperately want something too cheerful.
They're passionate fans, right? When you have the whole state of Michigan rooting for you in that particular manner, you know, there's not a lot to cheer for because not a lot of success that's happening. But yet when you do get it, you see what the potential is if you can make this consistent. And I think Coach Dan Campbell, he has that going in the right direction. The Ford family, they're going to bring everything to the equation to make sure that they continue to be successful. But you know you're doing right. You're doing good things whenever now you have other people around the league that are prodding your coaching staff, players, free agent, while you're targeting from Detroit. So you know they have something good going on. Now it's just a matter of making sure, you know, what does that look like on the rehab part? I mean, when you look at that, what does it look like when people are prodded from you? Are you able to replace? And I think that's going to be the next question and whether Dan Campbell can answer.
Quarterback specifically, what's the curve like when you get a new OC, whether it's internally or externally?
Well, you hope that the terminology doesn't change much, right? It's one thing to have a philosophy, but you have the majority of those players that are all system. They know that system, and it works.
Okay, yeah.
So now you just have to adjust from a coordinator perspective to say, okay, I understand you like this play. You call it that way. Now you have to remove egos. You want to know what? If you call it and you learn it that way, now I'm going to make sure that I do it that way. So there's a little bit of, you know, ebb and flow that happens when you have a new coordinator, especially when you have an experienced team coming back.
I was kind of shocked, Charlie, to see the way the run game came back this year. And Detroit was right at the forefront of going, hey, we know that we're tough. We know we're tough up front. And we got one dude who's, you know, Knuckles. We got one dude who's Sonic. So, like, that combination's great. But that kind of balance, is that kind of the perfect balance that most coaches are looking for? Because, like, a Kellen Moore is always kind of like, I got to pass. But it seems like the balance of having that run game again is starting to make its way back into the NFL strong.
The beauty of it is the fact that those two running backs that they have in Detroit, they're very similar. So it's not like when one comes in the game, he's the gadget guy and the defense is going to play it well. No, they can still run the football. And then you obviously, you know, you adjust accordingly that way. But it's just great to be able to see it because the success that they're having and they're able to push the ball down the field. When you're able to get off that play action game and hit those 18, 20, yard chunk plays, that's demoralizing to a defense because you're trying to jockey, but yet you're killing them and gashing them in those big plays, and that's why Detroit has the huge advantage.
So quarterback, like, I feel like most quarterbacks are like, I just want to throw because I'm a quarterback, and I'm going to make the star play. But when you have that kind of running game, you know this is going to help me get a bigger play, or this is going to help me get more wide open receivers.
Absolutely. It's one thing to say you want to throw it, but obviously you want to control that line of scrimmage, and when you're able to do so, when you talk about running the ball and you actually do it, that's something that we're like, wow, you're talking about it, but you can't stop it. And every quarterback wants to push the ball down the field, and I think those are things that are happening when you're a balanced offense in that particular perspective. Numbers are going to be what they are at the end of the season. Hey, 60-40, 70-30 running, and you just know that's why that self-policing that are happening, especially during bye weeks, to make sure you're self-evaluating yourself to make sure you don't become too predictable for defensive coordinators.
That's a strong week to really get to look at yourself.
Yes.
For sure. All right, so you get to pick any of the current receivers to throw to.
Ooh.
I'm going to give you one. You get one.
Just remember, we're in Dallas.
We're in Dallas.
If you want to cheat on that.
Yeah, it's okay. There are three significant. I mean, there's a lot more, but I think Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and CeeDee are at the top of that list. But you pick one out of this current group of receivers.
To be honest with you, I mean, I have to be selfish and I only say that, and I have to stick with the AFC North because I've seen Ja'Marr Chase. And when you see that happening, you're watching twice a year, just like, you know where the ball is going. You can't stop it. Like, come on. And, you know, even T. Higgins in that matter, you know, and he, that's why he's going to be a number one free agent coming out of here, and he's going to get paid handsomely somewhere. But it just wanted, that's why I have to stick within the division, because I've had more opportunities to watch those guys.
And you know, Kevin, you know I love T. Higgins.
Yes,
too,
so that's one your of those, guy.
He's helped my fantasy league so many times. But Ja'Marr Chase, I don't understand. All of a sudden, you look and he's open.
Yes.
I don't understand how. I would love to just have a camera on him all the time so I could really see how he wins these matchups. Have you watched him close enough to see how he wins his matchups? Is it strength? Is it just quickness? What is it for him that just changes?
I think when you're in that position, you got to make sure, hey, you're not cheating when it comes to stances, understand the inside route, outside route, but you have to make them all look the same. When you're able to run the route tree, now it makes those corners, they have to, you know, adjust accordingly. And I think those are things that you just want to make sure, because if you become stagnant, they don't move you around, you're in one position, it makes you a lot easier to become double-teamed.
Yeah, like we say with CD all the time, move them around.
You have to.
Mm-hmm.
What's that experience when that receiver is on the other team and you're watching it happen right in front of you? I know you're like, hey, come on, defense, but at the same time, you're like, I don't know how to block that guy. Like, what's it like watching that receiver against your team and you're like, I don't know how we're supposed to stop that?
You're tough, right? And I say only that because, watching Antonio Brown for so long, you knew where the ball was going. You're like, and it's very hard, but that's why offensive coordinators have to, you have to strategically, get your guys open. Whether that's a short motion just to go from a bump and run to now he's playing soft at 2-3 yards off to allow him to get a free release on his route. Those are things that you have to do, and if you're just stagnant, you become predictable in that particular manner. So the coordinators, they have to do a better job of making sure that they're able to game plan accordingly to get their guys in best position to be effective.
And now, we kind of had this discussion based off of something that Cam Newton had said last week. I think you might be uniquely presented to explain this to us as we talk with Charlie Batch right here on The Fan, and he said he preferred his MVP to a Super Bowl ring. And I was just curious your thoughts about, like, getting a Super Bowl ring, multiple Super Bowl rings, as opposed to, like, no, everybody knows I was the MVP. I was the dude in the league that year. Like, how do you fall on that?
Yeah, and I think, and I was caught, I was watching it live when it happened. Yeah. And I'm kind of listening to it, but I'm kind of doing something else. And when he said it, I looked up, and that was kind of a reaction to Stephen A. at that time. Yeah, yeah. But the way he explained it, I was like, it makes sense. If you do your job, you get rewarded with the MVP, and that takes you to the Super Bowl. People can't get out of the mind of he didn't jump on the football. That's what people take away from it to say you're selfish. It's not the fact of leading up to it. His point was, hey, if you do your job and those awards come with it, that's one thing. But ultimately, at the end of it, there's only two Super Bowl MVPs that are awarded during the course of the year, one regular season MVP and one Super Bowl MVP. And if you're able to win the Super Bowl in that particular manner, it's different, right? Super Bowl MVPs, they have MVP in their ring. That's different than the other 53 guys.
I did not know
that. Yes, and so when you are that, and that's, those are things that, you kind of look at it. So I understand his position when it comes to it, right? At the end of it, when your career is done, you didn't win a Super Bowl. When your career is done, you didn't have the chance to play. Now, if he made the comment and never played in the Super Bowl, that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
He lost the Super Bowl.
You said that,
and you try not to, you forget those losses, right? I can't tell you what happened in the Green Bay loss in the Super Bowl, but I can tell you about what happened against Arizona when we won the Super Bowl. So you tend to forget those things. And all I say is this, Cam, yes, people have the right to do it, but I understand, I respect his position when it comes to it, but ultimately he's always going to walk around as a Super Bowl MVP. He would be just a Super Bowl winner if he didn't win a Super Bowl MVP. It's a different conversation. That's why I say it's just depending on what your take is off of it.
What was your experience when y'all did win the Super Bowl, but you got hurt? Because they always are like, hey, we got to move on. We just got to move on. I'm not saying that you got left behind on purpose, but that's just the nature of the
business.
Remember,
Schlereth told us, he was like, if you're injured, you're dead to the team. You can't help them. And so, but I feel like you kind of may have had a different approach.
It was a different one because I was more involved with Ben Roethlisberger during that time and being involved, and I was there every single day. So it wasn't like on injured reserve and then all of a sudden you're not around the team. I was there every single day understanding the game plan, helping them out in that particular manner. Right, so when I look at it and I sit back and say, I have a Super Bowl ring and I have two Super Bowl rings. I didn't necessarily play in either one of the games, but I still have two. So when I look at it and say, hey, I'm a two-time Super Bowl winner, but the respect isn't there from everybody else because they'll look at it and say, you actually didn't win it because you didn't play.
Yeah.
So it's a different type of mindset, but when you know the things that you did behind the scenes to help contribute to that.
You don't got
to
explain yourself.
You don't have to explain yourself, and that's okay. And it's not for me to explain. It's the fact of, I was there. I was able to help accomplish what the goal was at hand. So, again, it's a different conversation. But, again, unless you experience that, that's what, you know, your opinions are going to sway one way or another.
As a glue guy, I know exactly what you're talking about there. You know what you helped accomplish. You were helping keep the glue together.
Absolutely.
All right, so.
And that's no different than a staff member.
Exactly.
Or somebody, an employee who works with the organization. They'll walk around with their Super Bowl rings on like they did. Some, yeah. You didn't see the field.
Hello, everybody.
But again, your contributions led to that to make the player's job easier.
Sure.
So we're all in this together.
My co-host, Mike Bassick here, he is in love with Mike Tomlin's coaching style and his, like, just the way that he's done this. Can you explain Mike Tomlin to us?
Yeah, I mean, just the way that he approaches leadership, right? When you walk in, you want to make sure your message is clear. Are you clear, concise, able to deliver your message? And the guys are going to buy in. From day one, Mike Tomlin accomplished that. And here we are 18 years later, and he's still doing the same thing. The one thing I respect about him is the fact that he doesn't shy away from the hard conversations. When you look at it and say, listen, guys, we have two talented guys, but I only have one roster spot. And we're going to watch this evolve right in front of us.
Yeah.
Every day, I'm going to put it on screen so all 51 other guys are going to look at this battle here, and we're going to determine the winner. People respect it, right?
Yeah.
But then you also respect the fact of, guys, I don't have time to play with you. We're not in the rebuilding mode right now because your career doesn't justify that. If we talk about rebuilding 3 to 4 years, you're not guaranteed to be here. So we have to accomplish that goal right now. And the goal is to win the Super Bowl. That's the standard. That's why you started saying the standard is a standard.
Yeah.
Because if for whatever reason the starter goes down and you are the backup, I don't expect the level to drop one bit. I don't expect the narratives to come out the next day to say the reason why we lost the game because our starter was out in the backup play. No, the standard is there. That's what we expect. That's why you're on this roster. And I love that he's always able to do it. Yes, you fall short of your goal. Yes, the Steelers, he won a Super Bowl, but then he lost another one, and here you are all of these years later. I think the conversation becomes diluted because what we saw with Tom Brady, you're like, he's in the Super Bowl 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, now here we are with Patrick Mahomes, and you're like, oh, he's in another Super Bowl. But you forget how hard it is to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very tough to do that. But those guys change the game. And right now, you have to get those learning curves accelerated to the point of making sure you respect people's careers. And that's what Mike Tomlin always does because he understands there's not going to be a lot of shelf life for you on your career. We got to make sure we maximize those out.
See, Kevin, that's a lot. Sometimes coaches play games. You leave the facility and you're like, I don't know what that coach thinks of me. Bochy,
yeah.
We always talk about it. You walk away, you're like, I know exactly what he thinks of me right now. And I feel like that's the way with Tomlin. He's going to let you know. He's not going to shy away from that at all.
Now, we're talking with Charlie Batch live in New Orleans. I was hoping that you could tell us not only the mission of the Best of the Batch Foundation, but for people who don't know, and I know you've shared this story before, but for people who are not familiar, kind of the genesis of how the Best of the Batch Foundation came to be.
Yes, in 1996, I lost my sister to senseless gang violence. She was caught in a crossfire between rival gangs, and she was only 17 years old, and she never had the opportunity to live life. And I said, if I was ever in position to give back, I would. Try to do something in a family that's never been done. Graduate college, 1997. Was drafted in Detroit by the Lions in the second round in 1998. So January of 1999, started the foundation, Best of the Batch Foundation. And we're an educational foundation. We focus on STEM programs, and we say STEAM instead of STEM, only because we include the A for arts, and focus on after school. So as we did that, I thought we were going to, you know, everything was going to be in Detroit. End up coming back, going to Pittsburgh, which is my hometown. A lot of people don't realize that. And 2002, redirected foundation goals, and here we are now servicing 3,800 kids annually in 9 counties throughout southwestern PA. We have 13 different programs that we run. In April of last year, we just did a ribbon cutting, and we went from 5,300 square feet to 33,000 square feet. So to be able to do that, all the programs that are happening within our foundation, all the support, we are truly grateful for humbled by all the support that we receive for that because they believe in the mission and vision of the Best of the Batch Foundation. So for anybody who wants to learn what we do, we love to collaborate. They can go to batchfoundation.org. We don't do all things well. We love to collaborate with people. And ultimately, we can now help you go from step A to step B on how we took that process. Because ultimately, if you're impacting kids, we want to help you be a resource to help continue to resource kids. So again, that's batchfoundation.org.
Do you ever give yourself a chance to kind of like, I know you got work to do at all times, but to take a step back and think about like, your sister would be really proud of you.
I do. Every day I walk in that building, I'm just like, wow. And I hope she's proud, you know, as she's smiling down on us. And when you see those kids coming in, you know, you're not going to get a lot of thank you from kids. But when you see the smiles, faces, you're like, it's well worth it, those tired days that you're putting in and pouring into those kids, because we want to make sure that we're trying to do our small part to help impact life, right, in this thing called life. And whatever that may look like, whether career field, whatever that may be for you education-wise, it's just something that we just love to be a part of. And we have so many volunteers that believe in what we're doing. And when you're sharing your time with us, that lets us know we are truly grateful and humble because you believe in what we're trying to accomplish. So it's a beautiful thing, to be honest with you.
That does sound like a beautiful thing. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. Thank you for jumping on with us, ladies and gentlemen. Charlie Batch right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk with the DraftKings pregame power-up host and Emmy Award winner, Trey Wingo, live from New Orleans on 105.3 The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're going to talk with Trey Wingo momentarily, but we have baseball news. Mike, would you like to reveal the news?
Sure. Elvis Andrus is going into the Texas Rangers Hall of Fame. So he'll be the fifth guy from the kind of what you'd consider maybe the first ever really successful Texas Rangers team.
Yeah. You have
Josh Hamilton, Michael Young, Ian Kinsler, Adrian Beltre, and now Elvis Andrus goes into the Hall of Fame for the Texas Rangers. I believe that will be celebrated in late June. For the Texas Rangers will be the game. I'm sure if you go to X or Twitter or whatever, it'll give you the exact date.
Andrus, by the way, is going to become the youngest individual ever selected to the Texas Rangers Hall of Fame. So congratulations to him and congratulations to us, because right now we get to talk to Trey Wingo. Trey, how excited are you that we're in the same hotel and you get to be on our show?
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you guys. And as I do every time with you guys, shout out to all my people in the DFW area, Haji, Sessions, Bryce, BB's, HCAT, Bird, everybody. Glad everybody's doing well and good to be with you guys in person as well as over the air.
Used to shout out Luca, but can't do that anymore.
He lives on the seventh floor. No, that's a different Luca. By the way, are you guys over that?
No.
No. This guy, Nico, basically has hitched his entire career to being right here. And if he's right, great
he's
for him.
Yeah.
But, man, talk about it. Well, finally, Jerry Jones isn't the worst GM in Dallas.
Mm. We kept waiting. I kept waiting for like a Scooby-Doo style reveal where they pulled it off.
And
it was, it was Jerry Jones all along.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that came out, I think it was yesterday, is the Referee Association said conspiracy theories were insulting and preposterous, I say, that the officials were in favor of the Chiefs. Did you think it was fascinating that they felt the need to address this conspiracy theory? And where do you fall on all of that?
Well, I think the whole thing is as dumb as a box of rocks. So I get it. And I wish the NFL official, what was the statement? What did they say?
It is insulting and preposterous.
With the caveat, but we realize we are terrible at our job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I didn't see that in the statement,
but that's what was missing.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the problem with NFL refs. They're bad. Okay. They're bad in every game. You just see more Chiefs games.
That's true.
Let me go through the days of the week the Chiefs played this year. Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
The only game they didn't play on was Tuesday because the NFL couldn't find a way to give you a Chiefs game on Tuesday. So when you say, I always see it in Chiefs games, you see more Chiefs games. They are in prime time. They are on this stuff. And I can really debunk this whole thing very simply, okay? It started in week two. Some people say it started in week one when Isaiah Likely was clearly out of bounds. That's not a bad call. He was out of bounds, okay? Week two, 4th and 16, incomplete, wait a minute, pass interference against the Bengals. First of all, they went through the receiver. It was blatant pass interference. But let's back it up. Let's rewind it. Why was it 4th and 16? Because on the previous play, it was 4th and 6. And the Chiefs converted a first down to Travis Kelce on 4th and 6 until there was a holding call against the Chiefs. So if you are of the mind that the refs are trying to help the Chiefs win, why would the refs then call a hold on a 4th and 6 conversion, setting up a 4th and 16?
Because as fans, we only look at the things that screw us over, never the things that benefit us.
Shoot me in the head with a poisoned frog arrow dart.
I wanted to bring one of those.
It's just, if you get through that through TSA, we're all screwed. the Texans game. Let's go through the Texans game. I get it. One of those calls is going to be called every time. The back judge makes the call on roughing the passer. He stands behind the quarterback. Will Anderson leads with the crown of his helmet. The head goes back. That flag's coming out every time. Now, you can say we should review it. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I would love that. That is not in play right now. But that flag's getting called every time. The second one was terrible. Never should have been called. Hey, Houston, you want to win the game? Maybe don't give up 8 sacks. Maybe you don't miss 4 kicks in a 1-score, the 9 position. Oh, how about this? This is crazy. Maybe you don't give up a 65-yard kick return to start the game. Don't want to hear it.
See, that's Roger Staubach saying, look, Jackie Smith dropping the ball, not the biggest moment. We had other times we could have won that game.
Bills game. Okay, let's go through the two crazy ones in the Bills game. The interception that everyone swore was an interception. That was the dumbest challenge I've ever seen in my life. Because what else happened on that play? There was a defensive holding call against the Bills. And it was clear and obvious. It was not an egregious one. It wasn't a bailout call. It was obvious. You saw it right there. No, by the way, there was also an egregious holding call later on against the Chiefs that Josh Allen actually pointed to the ref and said, there it is, and they called it. So even if they get the interception, the Chiefs will say, fine, we accept the penalty. We get 5 yards and a first down. And that calling an interception, I believe, actually helped the Bills because I think they scored on the very next play, which allowed the Bills to go down the field before the end of the first half and throw the touchdown to Mac Hollins, which made it a 20-16 game. And then they took a point off the board and went for two. Maybe you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Okay? And then the fourth down spot. If you believe he got the first down, I'm good with it. But there was nothing on that replay that was clear and obvious about where that ball was on the fourth down spot. So even in that situation, the Bills got the ball back with 3.5 minutes to play, down by 3 points, and they couldn't get it done.
Here's what we say.
Yeah.
If it was a conspiracy theory, there's no way, because we're the home of the Dallas Cowboys, there's no way they'd want the Dallas Cowboys to go 3 decades without even sniffing
factual
an NFC championship game.
Factual information.
Like, they know that the ratings would go up 20-30% if the Cowboys played an NFC championship game.
Correct.
And they can't get there for 3 decades.
Longest active drought of not playing on Championship Sunday in the NFL. And that's egregious for anybody that lived through the 90s with what those Cowboys teams did.
Yeah. And it's the 8th longest in the history of the NFL now. So
for a team with 5 Lombardi trophies.
Go us.
But Jerry was great on Landman. He was.
Yes, you're right.
He killed that scene. He killed that scene.
In case anybody ever wondered, hey, are you ever not going to be the GM? I feel like that scene right there was like, hey, stop asking me that.
I think we know the answer to that at the age of 83.
Do you have any interaction with Schottenheimer that you can draw from?
Brian?
Yeah.
Listen, I have a great Brian Schottenheimer story.
Okay.
And I have no idea whether this is going to mean he's a great head coach or not. But I respected the hell out of Brian for this. When he was an assistant with the Jets, on his day off in the offseason one day, he came up to Bristol and sat in with us a whole day watching us put together NFL Live. He came to the production meeting where we talked about the things we were going to talk about during that day. He then spent the day with the PAs who cut all the clips and the video and the highlights for the show. And then he was in the studio with us as we did the show because he said, I want to see how you guys cover us. I want to see what your process is to where you get with the things that you do. And I just thought that was awesome. Like that an NFL coach with everything that he's got going on and the things that he has to deal with. I mean, Bristol is in the middle of nowhere,
right? Mm-hmm.
Just be honest. Okay, I'm from Connecticut. I can say that. to get from the Jets facility to Bristol is not easy. You have to go off Long Island, around, and back up into the heart of Northwest Connecticut. It was 2+ hours. And 2+ hour drive there, 2+ hour drive back, just to watch us do an off-season show and how we processed the information. And I thought I respected the hell out of him for that.
Yeah, like we've said in our interactions, the guy, the man, is we like him.
Yeah,
we've got to figure out how the coach at some point.
Got to figure out the general manager.
Yeah.
Well, you saw Landman's never going to happen. Never going to happen. What's your feel for the game on Sunday? That was a big sigh for that question. Surely you knew that question was coming, right?
The Eagles are the better team. I don't think there's any question about that. Yet somehow they're a 1.5-point underdog because the Chiefs have won 17 straight one-possession games.
And that one guy.
The Chiefs have won 9 straight playoff games. A win on Sunday would tie them with the Patriots for the longest streak. They've already shattered the record for the most consecutive one-score games. That was the Patriots with their 12 or 13. They are in 17. Why would you bet against them? Last year in the Super Bowl, the Chiefs had one playoff touchdown drive, one touchdown drive in the Super Bowl, when they needed a touchdown in overtime to win the game.
Yep.
That was the only one. It was the only – the other touchdown was after, one play after a muff punt to Marquez Valdes-Scantling. That was it. He's Mariano Rivera, guys. He will choke you out in the ninth inning. First eight innings, does not matter. Give that guy a chance. Can I read you my favorite Mahomes stat of all time?
Please.
This is remarkable, okay?
Mike's going to love it. He loves the Chiefs.
That's why I'm wearing the hat.
There you go. Well, appreciate this, brother, because we'll never see this again.
I know.
I mean, people talk about the Patriots. Patriots dynasty was two separate dynasties.
Yes!
And then there was a 10-year drought where they didn't win dip, okay?
That's been his argument for years.
Okay, they went to two, but the Vikings aren't a dynasty because they never won one. The Bills aren't a dynasty because they never won one, okay? They've been to five of the last six Super Bowls. That's never happened. They have a chance to be the first. They're the first team ever to have a chance to three-peat. No one else could get past this hurdle, not even the Cowboys with Barry Switzer in Candlestick Park in 94.
No.
So they've crossed that threshold already. But this is a stat from a guy named Neil Payne, who I follow and does great work. Since 2001, before this postseason, there have been 125 drives in the playoffs where a team was trailing by 7 points or fewer and got the ball with less than a minute to play. These are your standard do-or-die moments that win games and define quarterbacks. 40% of the time, the team that needed the points pulled it off. Either they got the field goal to win or the touchdown to win or the field goal or touchdown to tie the game and send into overtime. Some quarterbacks are really good at it.
Yeah.
Tom Brady is 5 of 11 in those situations, 46%. Drew Brees is 3 out of 6, 50%. Only one quarterback is perfect. Patrick Mahomes is 7 out of MF and 7.
Mm.
So you want to bet against him?
Nope.
I say, what are you smoking? Like, what? I want what's in that bowl, baby.
Yeah.
Because I don't get it. I don't get it. They're the better team. Philadelphia is the better team. They don't got Mahomes. They don't got Andy Reid. And they don't have Steve Spagnuolo. And that, quite frankly, is all you need.
Man, thank you so much, Trey, for jumping on with us. Always, always excellent.
Renegade Sports app. Got to talk about the Renegade Sports app. It's a way to play fantasy football like real football. Let's say your starting running back gets injured in the first quarter. Oh, well, I can't use that running back now. No! They put in another running back in a real game. You get to draft another player. Keeps you alive. Keeps the drive going. Keeps you in the game longer. It's fantasy football the way you play real football. It allows you to play in games and be in championships and get to the playoffs longer, and that's what we're all looking for.
And you can download the Renegade Fantasy app from the App Store and Google Play.
Correct.
Do it right now, or at least in the commercial break,
exactly
right?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Coming up next, let's talk with Cosm President and CEO Jeb Terry, plus maybe a little bit of my buddy's an idiot. Next on The Fan.